You're listening to Between the Stripes LOI podcast. Subscribe now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your favourite shows from. Now here are your hosts, Kieran Burke, Jonathan Breyer, and Gary Riley.
Hello everyone and welcome back to Between the Stripes LOI podcast. It's Series 9, Episode 8 coming your way this week. Kieran Burke and Gary Riley with you once again. We're brought to you by our sponsor, Quinn AV. Check out quinnav.ie for all your sound, lighting and AV solutions. I promised you a couple of interviews on this week's show and we have duly delivered. We have got the Dundalk manager, Kieran Kilduff, and we've also got audio with Brandon Kavanagh after his heroics for St. Pat's against Waterford last week. Of course, Pat's live on the telly this coming week as well, so we caught up with Brandon ahead of that. Look, it's April Fool's Day today. I put out the tweet earlier on. It didn't catch many bites. I think it was a bit late with the April Fool's. I think you're meant to get them done before midday, aren't you guys? But I put it up that I'd watched all the highlights, and thankfully we wouldn't have to talk about any controversial refereeing decisions on this week's pod. That obviously was a joke. We've got a lot to talk about from the Premier Division games in particular. There's some incredible decisions we have to look back on, but some very unpredictable results in the First Division as well, and a win for Longford Town. So we should be in good mood on this week's pod, I think, guys.
Absolutely, yeah. Lovely win for Longford Town, fully deserving of it as well, which is nice.
And you on comms as well, of course, filling in for me.
Hopefully I didn't burst the eardrums of anybody. but yeah, no, it was good enough. Good crack. So
yeah, we've got plenty to get through. The BTS hotline, we've got some weekend reflections as well. That tweet got a lot of engagement, so we're going to read out some of our listeners' thoughts on what happened over the weekend in the league. And look, we'll be talking Bowes too, obviously, with Alan Reynolds under major pressure there once again this week. So lots to get through as ever. Let's get stuck straight into it. The Premier Division review. We'll start with Sligo Rovers 1, Shelburne 2. Sligo Rovers gifting Shelburne 2 goals. But fairness to Sligo, they rallied really well. A great response to going 2-0 down. They got their goal back. They put some pressure on. But, I mean, Shelburne, we spoke about them a couple of weeks ago that they probably needed the international break a little bit, that it'd be a good time for them to regroup. I mean, this was a wonderful reintroduction to league football for them, being gifted the goals, particularly the first one by Sligo Rovers.
The first one was just brutal. Like, it was so careless, so early on, like, where you don't want to make a mistake. Like, with Shelburne or Sligo not having a fantastic start to the season, let's say, to be so careless at the back, to just gift a goal within 3 minutes is just terrible. Like, it was so careless. And then a lot of finger pointing going on. It was to me, to you, your fault, my fault, you know.
Yeah.
Just not the way you want to start a game against the champions. Like, you're already under a bit of pressure. So to give away a goal like that is just putting yourself on the back foot to such an extent is terrible. But as you said, like, they did rally a bit, but just couldn't get that equaliser on the night. So good result for Shelburne, as you said, after the international break, which they we were kind of motioning that they needed it as well. So decent result for Shells too.
15 goals conceded in 7 games for Sligo Rovers, the most in the league. Are we worried about them?
I think you'd have to be. Like, whatever about like conceding goals, goals in general, but gifting goals away, like even Shell's second goal, it was kind of a breakaway, and what's your man's name?
McEnroy.
McEnroy. He kind of messed up the break.
He stood on the ball, left it behind him, and
it's like I couldn't recover from that. Like, you know, a bit of a break that they got. It was like nearly 1-on-1, and then the ball was just fired back in, everybody standing, and then it was whacked into the top corner. Like, really great finish.
Great finish.
But two horrendous bits of defending from Sligo. It's absolutely no wonder that they conceded that number of goals this season.
Yeah.
They have to do something about that sooner rather than later. It's not going to work for them at all.
And we've already spoke about maybe the limitations of their squad. Keane Kavanagh sent off. That's not helpful at all. Definitely a red card as well. I know he had probably no intent to do what he'd done, but he's caught, I think, was it Boyd? He caught him on the knee, caught him very high up. Like, it's 100% a red card. Referee got that spot on.
Yeah, I think so as well. Like, when you looked at it first, I was kind of thinking, like, he was just going to try and shoot, and that's what he was doing. But I think the way, how high he caught him up, I think it was McEnroy or...
I think it was Coyle, was it? He caught...
Oh, Coyle it was, yeah, sorry. Yeah. I don't see how, like, I can totally understand the referee's decision. Like, there was some talk about, like, oh, it was never a pen, and then some people that were there that saw it were like, no, what, or a red card, excuse me. There was no question of it. Like, totally no malice in it or anything like that, but he just catches him so high.
Yeah.
I think is the problem. So, good decision by the referee. Met it quickly, met it right, and that was the end of that.
Yeah, so a lovely return to league action for Shelburne. Bohemians 0, Galway United 2. Ooh. And I have to give you credit, Gaz, because last week on the pod when we were doing the predictions league, you said something along the lines of, I can just see it in my mind's eye, Hickey rising above a heap of soft Bowes defenders and bursting the ball into the back of the net. Now, that didn't exactly happen, but the first goal, Hickey wins a flick on in midfield. It goes out wide. Cross comes in. And Moses Dyer, I sent you a screenshot of this today. He outjumps about three or four Bowes defenders, yeah, and just buries the ball into the back of the net with the header. And then when he scores an absolute screamer later on. But again, Rob Cornwall lets the ball bounce. There's been some talk about the goalkeeper. Could he have done better? I'm not so sure about that. But I just want to focus on that first goal for now. It just sums up everything that is wrong with Bowes at the moment. A complete lack of, stomach for the fight.
Yeah, there doesn't seem to be a whole pile of guts in this Bowes side at all. And not up for it. Like, even if you look at the way the cross comes in for Dyer, for the opener, for Dyer's header. Like, so the Bowes lad runs away and then tries to make up the ground. But it's essentially a free cross into the box and an unchallenged header. You wouldn't, like, you,
Bobby Burns with the cross.
It wouldn't have been, it would have been as handy to score a goal on the goal on the training ground, yeah, for Galway. Bowes weren't next or near them.
I can guarantee you that goal would never be scored on the Galway training ground, because if that happened, John Caulfield would kill every defender involved. Simple as that.
Oh,
it wouldn't be tolerated.
It just wouldn't be tolerated. Like, but especially, like, whatever about it being a great cross and, he jumps up high and everything like that, the way that there's no interaction from really any Bowes player in the whole thing other than picking it out of their net is kind of indicative of the way Bowes are at the moment. Weak, gutless, just everything that you don't want in your team. But look, as you said, I expected that, and it was good that I got my prediction right, but I was kind of disappointed when I was, like, watching a bit of the game on Friday.
Yeah, you got the score prediction right in the predictions league. Well,
yeah. 2-0. But I was kind of disappointed that I didn't go for 3-0. Even though Bowes did have, like, some chances and it did have some possession and were doing some nice things, but, like, it just wasn't enough. Like, it wasn't clear-cut enough. And, well, the second goal...
These stats I'm looking at couldn't be right, could they?
Which fudges?
Bowes 31 total shots, but 4 on target.
I'm not sure about 31 shots, but, like, they did have plenty of, like, chances and, like, were trying to get some chances, obviously, throughout the game, and they did have some shots on goal. But I never really felt that they were going to score, if that makes sense. Colin Whelan had a couple of chances as well. There was one, I think it was one really good one just at the start of the second half, where he kind of lets it bounce by him.
Yeah, a little swivel.
Swivels. Yeah, he did really good stuff. A good striker's opportunity, and it was probably easier to score because he's right in front of goal. But he just thinks it wide. They weren't not creating chances, but I think just their general weakness across the team is kind of what's doing them at the moment. And there's a lot of one thing I felt was that there's no real Bowes player taking responsibility. It's kind of like, oh, well, why didn't you do it? That seems to be like a mentality at the moment in Bowes squad at the moment. But look, that's they also had, do you remember that chance that they had that the keeper kind of just crawled it out, like, was it from Flores? It was kind of bounced into the ground and then it was going into the top corner and the keeper
got
really
deflection.
Well.
Yeah.
Like, that was probably their best chance of the game. So, like, they are creating some chances. It's just the lack of quality across the team and lack of responsibility, I think. If you look at it like that, goal, the second goal from Dyer, what it was an absolutely great strike. It came out of nothing. The defenders weren't paying attention, didn't take control of the situation and managed to concede again. And that kind of put Bowes out of it. They were never going to score two.
Yeah. I think we need to talk more about Galway. We'll probably talk about Bowes again a bit later on. Probably just going to be repeating ourselves really about this whole situation with Al Reynolds and the whole footballing structure around the club. But Galway, do we need to talk about them as title contenders?
I think...
Is that a conversation we need to have?
As in me and you?
Yeah.
Yes.
Only unbeaten team in the league.
Mm-hmm.
Joint second lowest amount of goals conceded. And the one thing that might surprise many, only St. Pat's have scored more goals than Galway this season. The likes of Dyer have come in and added a real sharpness to that attack, something they didn't have last season.
Yeah, that's true. And they're grinding out results. Like, they're obviously haven't lost a game this season, so
no.
They're doing. They're picking up points.
And I think I'd seen a bit of Galway earlier in the year. Saw them against Drogheda. Wasn't impressed with them. Seen them on the telly a couple of times. Watched a couple of the games on LOI TV. And I think we kept saying not playing that well. And there was a lot of games where set pieces were bailing them out, but they mm-hmm. played extremely well in Daly Mount the other night. Now I know Bowes are in an awful rag order. At the
they were playing nothing. Like yeah, you know? Yeah. Yeah, like I think like they're grinding up results. You know, that home game against Shelburne a few weeks ago, where it was an own goal that got them the equaliser in that game. They had some chances to win it as well, but so did Shells. So that was, you know, a really good battle. They always had that in their team, but they seem to have like got a bit more mature, where they're able to not concede these goals. Mm. That are taking them out of wins and stuff like that. So I think they should be in the conversation. Certainly wasn't a team that I considered earlier on this season, to be quite honest.
I mean, is there that much of a difference between how Shelburne went about winning the league last season and how Galway approached the game? Shelburne last season was all about, you know, being tight, being organised. They had those couple of flair players up the top of the pitch that made the difference. The Sean Boyd.
All the 1-0s.
All the 1-0s. I mean, Galway could easily follow that blueprint.
They certainly could. And like, you know, they have the... With John Caulfield and Ollie Horgan there on the sideline, they have the...
Got a league winning manager. They know the... Yeah.
Yeah. But also, like, they know how to dig points out of games.
Yeah.
When they're, as you said, when they're not playing well, they have that hardiness in them. They're obviously extremely fit. They're probably
the fittest team in the league.
Yeah, best conditioned team.
Yeah.
And they seem to adhere to the game plan. You know, there isn't a lad gone off the reservation or anything like that ever.
Yeah.
Because I just don't think out of all the teams that would be tolerated from Ollie and John. So, yeah, I think definitely, certainly, I think Europe is
a
comfortable target.
Yeah.
Comfortable target.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely agree with that. Right, Cork City 1, Drogheda United 1. This might be the game that had the most controversial moment and decision. And I've had a few people on to me about this and they're looking for our thoughts on it. So I'm going to go straight to you. I'll hold off for now. But give me your thoughts on the disallowed goal from the Cork City goal kick that Drogheda pounced on, had the ball in the net, and then it was disallowed.
Look, by the letter of the law, which is unfortunate here, it should have been disallowed.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's foot on the line and all of that stuff. Now, there's a couple of points I do want to discuss with you. You mentioned that it was a Lua that had his feet on the line, but he actually didn't really move. He wasn't the player involved in the goal, but he still was in the box.
Mm.
So it doesn't really matter. If you think about a penalty.
Yeah, exactly.
It doesn't really come into it. The one extremely frustrating thing that I have here is that referee didn't blow or the linesman didn't flag until the ball was in the net, until the damage was done.
Yeah.
So what that has created is this situation where everybody thinks it's a legitimate goal because there was no foul called up until the ball was in the net.
Yeah.
And that's just brutal, brutal, brutal refereeing. And even like if you look back at the highlights, I was watching this game live. I had that on the telly and had Bowes on the laptop. I was just looking, what is going on here? Like, even the way Rob Hennessy comes into the picture, he doesn't seem to know what's going on. He's not even looking. He's looking over at the linesman, looking to bail him out. Linesman's not flagging. They're probably chatting on the intercom or whatever, but they're not. No one's making any motions here. The ref blows the whistle and nothing really happens. I think I can understand, you know, on the video, we can understand that. Yeah, it should be disallowed. But it's just extremely bad application from the refs.
Yeah, I think it sets a dangerous precedent as well, because I don't know if you remember, there was a really bizarre penalty. I'm just trying to think what team it was in England last year. Was it an Arsenal player or somebody picked... It was Harry Maguire, I think, picked up a goal kick. Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah, and happened twice in the same game in Germany.
Did it, yeah?
Yeah. One lad picked it up from a goal kick, and I think another lad picked it up from... he thought it was a free.
Yeah. But, like, I mean, as you said, Rob Hennessy has watched this goal kick been taken. If there's an issue with encroachment, the whistle should be blown straight away. Yep. Get away from the box, out of the box, retake that goal kick. He's allowed the player to develop, and only when the ball's ended up in the back of the net. Like, it'd be harsh if he had blown it halfway through Drogheda press, and if Drogheda had applied the press there, and you're like, oh, geez, Corker in trouble here, and then he blows the whistle, you're right, oh, okay, grand. He should have blown it earlier, but, you know, no damage done. For him to watch the ball end up in the back of the net, for the Cork players then to start jawing, and for him to then make the decision, oh yeah, there was encroachment there. So what's the stop next time, you know, if a team like Cork are trying to play out from the back, which they often do, and the defender picks it up and says, oh no, I'm taking the, you know what I mean?
Well, I think the issue is, right, why did he, as you mentioned there, as soon as the ball was kicked and there was encroachment, he should have called it. And because then you're asked, my question to you is, right, and you know, it's rhetorical, why did he only blow the whistle, as you said, after the John?
Yeah.
He couldn't have gone, oh, yes, I remember now, 4 seconds ago, there was a encroachment. We need to, it's a free out. But he didn't get another view of it. How did he make the decision, oh, yes, there was encroachment? Do you know what I'm saying? Mm. Like, there's encroachment when he sees it, or there isn't.
Yeah.
And no one makes any decision here until it's in the back of the net and the bitching and moaning starts. By the way, it was brutal from the Cork players not paying attention to what was going on around them. The keeper, you know, arsing around.
I think you'd have to give credit to the Drogheda, again, coaching staff, Kevin Doherty and Darragh Doyle, because
he did mention it.
This is something that they've identified with Cork, and it's something they planned for, and they've almost executed the perfect plan. Decision's gone against them, but... yeah, it'll be interesting to see whether Cork are going to continue with this crack in the box or not in future matches.
Yeah, and like, I think, you know, that particularly with all the jibber-jabber around it, like, it's kind of game over for that.
Yeah.
For Cork and any opponent that's going to exploit that. But, you know, while I'm just really disappointed with the referees, like, this is basic stuff. Like, this isn't like a 50-50...
I've done kids games where I've had, this was before the rule was changed. You remember, it's only a couple of seasons back, where a defender wasn't allowed in the box for a goal kick. Like, I've given that several times where a defender's been stood in the box and the keeper's played out short, and I've made the goalkeeper retake the goal kick, like, instantly. Like, yeah, it's either the restart was proper or the restart wasn't proper. There can't be, I'm not sure whether that was a proper restart or not. Let's just see how it plays out. Oh, geez, it didn't go well for that team. I better bring it back. You cannot do that. And I think that actually is the best way to sum up what happened the other night in Turner's Cross. Away from that controversial decision, Drogheda United should have won this game and won it comfortably. I thought they battered Cork for large parts of the game.
They certainly did. And I think that's probably why there's a bit of extra... feeling of being hard done by, we'll say, from Drogheda, where... you have so many opportunities throughout the game and they leave points on the table away from home.
I'm not sure whether these stats I'm looking at are overly accurate or not, but 23 shots for Drogheda. I mean, if you said a couple of seasons ago that Drogheda were going to go away from home, top of the table, have 23 shots at goal in a Premier Division game, you'd be like, Jesus.
You wouldn't get that over 3 years.
What's going on?
Yeah. But yeah,
amazing. It's amazing the start of the season they've had and everything they achieved last year. It's not being talked about enough, I don't think.
No, it's certainly not. But I do like they've had a fantastic start to the season. But I think even in this game, you got a good snippet as to why they're in the position that they're in. They're creating so many chances all the time. They still have a few players out.
I was just going to say, I'm missing key players, but they're so well drilled, so well drilled.
Absolutely, but they're adhering to the plan.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean? Like I'd say, Kevin Doherty and Darragh Doyle are making up plans. And for
again, like you said, like you said about Galway, no one's going off the reservation. Everyone's rowing in the one direction. That they've got that spirit, that unity, and you can see that every time they take the pitch.
100%. Now, obviously, playing and winning an FAI Cup final there last year will definitely make you buy into what Darragh Doyle and Kevin Doherty are selling. There's no question about that. But it's coming off for them now. They've had a fantastic start to the season. Lost only one game so far this season. And, you know, they're going around places and getting annoyed that they're not winning games. I thought they were full value for that win on Friday night, even though they didn't get it, and I said Cork would win.
Moving on to a less interesting game, but there were some controversial decisions in this as well. The game at Tallaght. Yeah. Shamrock Rovers 0, Derry City 0, an absolute bore fest. But one of the red cards that was dished out there was absolutely ludicrous. It was the sending off for Mullen for Derry City. The second yellow he receives is absolutely laughable.
I think so. Yeah. what did you make of the first one? We'll go over to the handy one.
McGinty had already had a very shaky start to the game. There was it a corner he fumbled? Or a cross that he ended up running out behind for a corner. He's looked shaky for a while since he's come in there. Now there's been a couple of mistakes from McGinty that I wouldn't have expected from him. He had a shaky start to the game. He gets sent off. I think it was the correct decision by the letter of the law. I think it was a red card. But I just can't get over the second yellow card from Mullen.
Yeah, no, I think you're right on the McGinty one. Stupid stuff. Didn't need to get involved with that at all. It gives an opportunity for Poles to come in. See how he doesn't.
Made one or two decent saves when he came on as well, and he probably feels like he's been hardly done by, because I think he did. I think most people feel he'd done all right last season, particularly given some of the commentary that was circling around him. If you had never watched Leon Poles or Shamrock Rovers before, and you tuned into some of the pods out there, or just talked to supporters, you would have thought, geez, this is going to be a pure car crash, this fella in goals by the sounds of it. But he did absolutely fine for large parts of it.
He was in Europe as well.
Yeah, yeah.
So, like, you know, he did perfectly fine. He was part of that squad that went deep into Europe. So, you know, I can't really take it away from too
much. You know, he's had to wait so many years for that chance. Been number two to Manus there for so many years. And now he's back on the bench again. So, yeah, it's a chance definitely for him to show what he can do. But on the game itself...
The red card from Mullen, I know I cut across you there, like, it wasn't a fantastic game, so there's probably not much else to talk about.
But no, I think there's plenty to talk about, because, Mullen shouldn't have been sent off. He goes off in 42 minutes, but Derry had the best part of 20 minutes with an extra man, did feck all with it. And we've spoken a little bit about this Derry team and some of the issues we have with it. I'm looking back at that game the other day. If you look at the highlights even, any kind of chance that Derry have, give the ball to Michael Duffy. He's going to run 20 yards and he's going to try and score a screamer from distance. That seems to be the MO for Derry at the minute. All these players they've brought in, I don't see any of them making major contributions at this moment in time.
No. No, I don't. And I'm not really sure what Derry going to look like. We'll say...
That's the thing as well. Sorry to cut across you, but I don't really know what this Derry team are about. And I know it's early days for the new manager, but I couldn't really tell you what style of football they play. They don't seem to have an identity.
No, and I think so. I think that's probably part of a hangover of, like, we'll say, players that are still there from last year. Like, we'll say, I don't think Condi should be in the team. I think there's an element of, like, as you just said there, right, Michael, bail us out, please. Do what you do, and we'll hope for the best. I think it's frustrating to watch. You know, if I was a Derry fan travelling up and down the country, I'd be really disappointed with, for the last couple of years, really, you know what I mean? Like, you've had, you know, nice points in time throughout that, a couple of good results, or, you know, what was your man's name that left there? Jamie McGonigal.
Yeah.
That screamer he scored up in the last minute on telly.
Yeah.
You know, against Rovers. Yeah, yeah. You know, that was like, this is it. This is where we start. And like, nothing materializes.
Yeah.
It must be incredibly frustrating. Like, I would say, you know, even would say me, myself and yourself, we mightn't have been too excited about Longford Town season, but we've seen three or four fantastic games, you know, really entertaining. And like, Longford Town have had a good couple of results. Even the game up in Oriel wasn't very satisfied with. And it's just like, I don't know, from a Derry fan.
Yeah, that's another point I was going to make as well, because Tiernan Lynch, one of his big selling points when he came in was, I want to make people excited to come to the Brandywell again.
Yeah.
The football is as boring as it was last season.
Yeah, no, it's terrible. It's absolutely terrible. The one thing I will say, I don't know how true this is, but like, our players and the Derry team in general just feeling under pressure because of the last couple of years of expectation that hasn't materialized. Like, is it like that you're bursting yourself so much that you just can never get it right because you're so freaked out about it nearly, and you can't go around. Like, there's no calmness.
I think they've brought in enough new players to get over that, to be honest.
Yeah, no, I'm just trying to. There should be
a freshness about this Derry team, but there's not. It feels like, as you said, a hangover.
It's exactly the same. Yeah, if I was, you know, if I squinted my eyes and I couldn't really make out all the players, you know, who exactly they were, you could say that game was exactly the same as the game they played last year.
That's what I mean. I know it's early days and these lads might find their feet in the league yet, but at the moment, the players that have come in are not adding much more than the players that were there last season, if adding anything at all extra.
Yeah, well, probably adding to the wage bill. like, it's still a lot of Michael Duffy.
Yeah.
Please do something, or Mullen or something like that. Like, it's just... Yeah, I don't know how this is, like I said, and that's what I was going to say about, like, what's this team going to look like in September when you have no more excuses about gelling and getting to know each other? Sure, they just want to know each other. They know each other plenty. They have a go on nights out all the time. So, like, you know, the time for any of that is over. You know what I mean? Now it's time for the rubber to hit the road, and it just hasn't materialized again. And I'm not really sure, as you said, like 20 minutes they had of 10 of an extra man on the field, and you probably wouldn't have noticed it at all from a Derry perspective. And
let's not let Rovers off lightly here either. They contributed to this stinker of a game. Just one point on Rovers. Is the lack of a striker going to kill them this season?
Yes, probably. Like, even Gaffney only been signed in at the end.
Yeah,
I think Johnny Kenny is obviously a miss for anybody, but now the fact that Rovers don't really have an out and out striker, like, they brought in Healy, who's been good, Danny Grant, who has been good as well, which is probably a surprise considering, you know, both let him go at all. But it's just, there is this like kind of bluntness to Shamrock Rovers. I'm not sure, like who's going to bail them out this season, like, or who's going to get even 10 goals? Is Rory Gaffney going to get 10 goals this season? He's probably not going to play enough to score 10 goals. So I'm not really sure where that is going to come from. Yeah. And that's a major problem.
Yeah, major problem.
Actually, just on that, did you see this? Just when you mentioned Stryker and Shamrock Rovers, did you see that rumour about Charlie Austin?
Yeah, the tweet.
Yeah. Yeah. That'd be good though. I always liked him as a player for some reason.
Yeah, he was good.
Not that he was prolific or anything, I just enjoyed him.
Yeah.
So that'd be cool.
Right, Waterford 1, St. Pat's 2. It was the Brandon Kavanagh show, and we're going to hear from him very shortly on the pod as a result.
Yeah, really tough game for Waterford though, wasn't it? Obviously, huge result for St. Pat's. Like, they're top of the table now.
But it did not look likely with 15, 20 minutes to go, even 10 minutes to go. I mean, Waterford were the better side for the majority of this game.
Yeah, and like, they did have some chances that, like, they just didn't capitalise on. But one thing I will say, what a header from Amand.
Oh, unbelievable.
Was it just it reminded me of that.
I was actually thinking about that. Which one?
Remember Suarez?
Scored from like the penalty spot.
About the edge of the box or something like that. Very similar. And he just buries it into the top corner. Sensational goal to see.
I think he's the only striker in the league that scores that goal. Patrick Hammond.
Wouldn't agree there. But I see your point. He had another chance in
he did, the volley.
The volley strikes it really, really well and comes onto it lovely, and you're just thinking, oh, I can see this.
He's class. I could watch him play all day.
Yeah, 100%. But yeah, he just couldn't get the second goal, which I think probably would have been the game would have been done and dusted at that.
I think so. They definitely don't lose it anyway.
Yeah. But look, it was just, you know, tough going, and I suppose that's just the way it goes when you're playing against a team with that level of ability in St. Pat's. But look, really great result for them. They'll be obviously dug out with the own goal. Leahy was very unfortunate. I think it's the ball who I can't say who was running in, but just kind of probably onsides him.
Yeah, it's Kavanagh with the cross, though. It's such a good cross. Like something like that's likely to happen when you put in that quality.
It's sensational. Yeah, no, it's absolutely brilliant. And then the free kick as well signs it up there, what, 2 or 3 minutes later. Greedy.
The free kick's amazing because it's like he's just stroking the ball. He's not hitting it hard or doing anything fancy with it. It's just like an artist, you know,
yeah,
throwing the wrist at the brush onto the paintboard, like, or whatever.
It's kind of like Meow Lad kicking a ball. Like, he just, you know, he's afraid if I kick this any harder, my leg will fall off. But obviously, there's quite a bit more skill in what Brendan Kavanagh did than Meow Lad did. He's probably watched 2 football matches in his life, apart from Italian 90 and 94. But yeah, look, I'd say it just hits it into the right spot, and the keeper just can't get across in time, and shinny. That's all there's to it. But what a result for Pat's coming from 1-0 down in the last couple of minutes, but a right kick in the balls for Waterford.
Just disappointing on Pat's for them. Yeah, just before we go to Brandon Kavanagh, just on Pat's, not overly convincing so far this season, but they're top of the league.
I think a lot of the talk is
it too simplistic to look at it like, oh, when this team clicks, everyone else is in trouble? Or is that just simply going to be the case?
I think it's going to be the case, to be quite honest. Like, it's hard to look past, like, the 10 or 11 games that they won in a row towards the end of last season.
Yeah.
Like, they were...
You know, they've got that in them. If they do that, then they probably win the league easily.
I think if they get up and running, like, as we're saying, about some of the stuff that they played towards in the latter third of last season was just unbelievable. Like, it was just so nice to watch, and you're always nearly went to a few Pats games and you were just expecting it to happen. When are these boys going to turn it on? And they're still the most wins in the league so far this season. They've won 4 out of their 7 games, so it's not as if they're shite. Like, and people are going on as if, like, oh, we've only played well for 10 minutes this season and we're top of the league, like, blah blah blah. Like, that's obviously not the case. But I think, like, they do have gears to go, and I think as time goes on, they're going to work those kinks out where they're going to be strong favourites for the title.
And even you look at the subs, he used all 5 subs the other night, Kenny. Simon Power comes on, he can win a game on his own. Jamie Lennon can make sure you don't lose a game on his own. He's that good in the 6. McClellan is such a good player. Connor Carty would probably start for a lot of teams in the league, and Sean Hoare has the experience and he comes on as well. Like, unbelievable the quality they have. So look, with that, let's go and hear from one of those Super Saints stars. That is Brandon Kavanagh, the match winner from Friday. He speaks to us now on Between the Stripes LOI podcast.
Brandon, match winner at the weekend. Is that up there with one of your best moments since you went to Pat's?
Yeah, I think so, yeah. That was a huge moment for the club, and especially last minute winners, there's nothing better.
And overall, how would you assess the start of the season? I think if you listen to a lot of pundits and experts at the moment, they'd maybe say picking up decent results, maybe not firing on all cylinders just yet. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I'd say so. Yeah, I think I would say we had the best of starts, you know, and I think the pitches have a part to play, and I think that's the problem at the minute. But with us, yeah, I think we're slowly getting there. And listen, if you pick up points when you're not playing as well, yeah, when the pitches do get better, hopefully we'll get back to that stage.
And look, I know you're a player and you don't get involved in the politics of the league and all the rest, but it's a subject that's it's becoming more prominent now, isn't it? Because the attendances are up, the TV coverage, as we know, it's never been better. Everything's on the up and up, but the pitches just seem to maybe be holding the product back slightly in the early stages of the year. I'm sure they'll get better as the year goes on and we go into the summer. But as a player, is it frustrating that you know, you're not being maybe able to show your best football because of the playing conditions?
Yeah, I think so. Like, listen, well, everyone's on the same playing field, like, you know yourself, but like, the pitches do have a huge part, and especially what you're saying, like, we've packed out stadiums and we've, like, live coverage on the telly, and obviously you want them at the best standard, you know?
Yeah. And look, I know you've been with Pats now for a decent little while, but I think a lot of people were quite surprised to see you leave Derry, a young player with a huge amount of talent, and you left and went back to Pats. What was kind of the motives behind that? Was it a mutual agreement, or were you kind of shown the door?
No, it was more on my side, you know. I loved my time up in Derry at the time, and for me, the opportunity came where I could go and play more football. And, like, listen, Rory was absolutely fantastic for me up there. And just before I left, he did ask me if I wanted to sign a new contract. And at the time, I think I was ready to kind of leave and go for a new challenge. Like,
yeah, that was probably your first experience properly away from home too, would it have been?
Yeah, it would have been, yeah. Listen, when you were younger, you go on a few trials here and there, but it was great to live up there. I absolutely loved my time up there. It's a great city and stuff, and it was great at the time.
Yeah, it wasn't a case if you didn't settle or homesickness or anything like that. It was just you felt it was time to maybe freshen things up in your career.
Yeah, no, not at all. I absolutely loved it up there. Well, yeah, like what I said, I just wanted a new challenge, and I've been loving it since I came here.
And how are you finding things under Stephen?
Yeah, really good. He's a great manager. You can see, like, he's won a lot of things. He's won everything. So I'll look for him to give us his knowledge of it, and yeah, try drive us on.
Yeah, and just finally tapping back into something we were discussing earlier, the league and the vibrancy around it seems to be particularly present at Pats at the moment, sold out grounds every week, and so much buzz around the team, and particularly with Stephen been there as well. Is this the most enjoyable time you've had in your career so far?
I'd say so. Of course, it's very enjoyable when you're playing, like, it, you know, but yeah, it's great when the stadiums are packed the way they are. It's a brilliant buzz around, and yeah, especially when you're playing in the game, you can definitely feel the difference.
Brandon, thanks for your time. Best luck the weekend.
Yeah, brilliant. Thank you.
Yeah, that was Brandon Kavanagh. Right, let's move on to the First Division, where Brandon played a little bit of football, of course, wasn't he? Was it Drogheda or Bray he was with? Or was he with the two of them at one stage?
Was he?
Remember? Do you remember that far back?
No, not a clue.
He was Rovers B, I think, first, wasn't he?
Oh, that sounds familiar. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, I think so. Yeah, he's getting filled in by Longford Town. Although they bet us one year.
They did. Yeah, no. Rovers 2, Bray, Derry and Pats. He wasn't a Drogheda, he was a Bray on loan, I remember that.
Oh.
So there you go. You never know who's going to come out with the First Division next. And actually, that's something we'll be talking about with Kieran Kilduff shortly. It was very noticeable, the game I was at Oriel on Friday. 8 teenagers started the game, 4 for Dundalk, 4 for Wexford. A lot of talk at the moment about player development in the league and academies. At the same time, First Division clubs have had their UEFA money cut and are expected to fund these academies.
Yeah, with no solution in place.
Doesn't make sense to me, but we'll get to that with Kieran Kilduff later. Let's start with, this is a bit of a messy First Division review because we had one game last night. So the game last night obviously was UCD against Bray. Bray winning 1-0 there. A very good couple of days for Bray because they were surprised 2-1 winners at home to Cove on the Friday. So a great couple of days for Bray Wanderers.
Yeah, absolutely massive. Like, it wasn't, I don't think anybody was expecting that. I think everybody had Cove down to do a job on them, but wasn't to be. Really good results for Bray. Two penalties won them the two games.
Yeah, the penalty last night was emphatic from Max Murphy. The one he scores on Friday, the keeper gets a paw on it. But the one last night, no chance. No keeper stopping that.
Yeah, he does really well. Really stupid penalty to concede as well. I know it was in the six-yard box and, you know, you're getting a bit...
Which is the one on Friday? Conceded. The keeper?
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah.
No. This was the one last night.
Oh, the one last night. Well, it looked a bit soft, didn't it?
I don't know. I think he piles into the back of him. Like, you know what I mean? Like it was just like, oh shit, I better do something here so we don't concede. But I don't think that was ever on that challenge. And, you know, that was the difference maker in what was like, you know, I'd say the Strand Hill in Sligo was a better surface than that was.
Jesus Christ. It's gone from one extreme to another up there.
Yeah,
from
it's brutal.
Mud path to a beach. Yeah, it's absolutely desperate. Just on the one Friday, though, the late penalty for Bray there. Keeper definitely does get a touch on the ball, but then he wipes the man. Oh, he does, I think, yeah. But then he absolutely wipes the man out. So it's that age-old debate of where does, you know, one challenge end and another start. Like, he does make serious contact with the man. I thought he got a nick on the ball first, but, you know, it's a difficult one for the referee there.
Yeah, okay, I see what you mean. I just saw you know, the keeper coming and wiping out the player.
He definitely got a little nick on the ball. Definitely did. But does that justify the amount of contact he's made with the man then?
Yeah, it does, yeah. Yeah, that is never a penalty. Because I think I text you to say that he absolutely poleaxed the defender, which he does. But he does get the ball first. Sorry, I didn't know.
What's the difference there? What's the difference between me going in for a tackle and I win the ball, but then my boot comes up and I catch you in the knee and I get a red card? Do you know what I mean? It's the follow through here that's done the goalkeeper.
Do you think?
Yeah.
But like in those situations, like I would say, if there's two players running in and they both slide in, I know the way, for some reason, refs go, whoever starts crying first gets a free kick. Which shouldn't be the case. Like, if two players are going in, honestly, into a 50-50, and one lad comes out the worst, that doesn't necessarily mean that they were fouled.
But it's not one of them either where the keeper comes out and, say, gets a big, massive paw on the ball and he knocks it out for, you know, out towards the corner flag. He's got a little touch. The ball's still kind of in the goal area.
But if you look back at it, he doesn't... he actually stops the ball and then your man's foot comes in and brings it further again.
Not sure. I don't think we're going to solve this this mystery tonight, but
It's not a penalty. Yeah, it's Bray get lucky there. Yeah, that's not
either way, a good weekend for Bray. Absolutely, result for Cove. It's been a
shocking start for UCD, huh?
I'm just going to say, you think UCD are turning a corner. They go down to Tralee. They win 1-0 in a scrappy enough game. And I even spoke to Kieran Cadduff after that because that's who they're playing on Friday. And he was like, oh, we're probably getting UCD at a wrong time now because they're probably going to start motoring now. And I think everyone feels it's a false position that UCD have. Then they go and lose that game last night. And again, didn't play overly well.
No, I think it's a real concern. They just haven't got clicking, got going at all yet. Excuse me, but
that was their first win of the season on Friday night, wasn't it? Away to Kerry.
Yeah, it was. Yeah,
it's interesting. Their first win has come away from home. Like, you'd have to wonder how big of an impact that pitch is having on them.
Yeah, but they've played on it more than anybody else. They should be like, yeah, this pitch is shite, but at least it's our pitch and we know what we're doing. But did you just to mention the goal that they scored, and I use the term scored lightly, against Kerry? Did you see it?
I did, but
it was like flicked across. It was across the box, and the defender.
Oh yes,
bundled it into his own net by mistake, but like it was particularly bad.
Yeah,
like, they're dominating no one. They're not creating their own chances. It's a really poor start to the season, and something needs to give quite quickly. And Sean Brennan getting sent off for UCD last night is not going to help the situation.
The second yellow he gets last night, it's such a stupid tackle to make. He's not a kid. He's been around the league long enough. He's been in England. He's more streetwise than that. I was surprised.
It was brutal.
He sent off, 33 minutes in or something like that?
That was the second yellow or something like that, around a half an hour.
He's better than that. And they can't be without a player like him, given the form they're in. So, yeah, it's a desperate start to the season for UCD. We'll fly through the other games. Athlone 0, Finn Harps 1. No manager, no problem for the boys from Ballybuffet.
Honest to God. It's a huge result for Harps. They've kind of copped on a bit in the last few weeks, which is good, I suppose, for them. You know, they've have two wins. Well, there's a few teams on similar enough points in the mid of the table. I know we're very early on in the season, but
the win against Bray, as you'd say in horse racing, the form has been seriously advertised by Bray now. To beat them 5-0 and then see Bray win a back-to-back games against one of the title favourites as well.
And Bray are now third.
That's got to give Harp serious confidence.
It certainly does. Like, you know, a good win away on AstroTurf as well, after a 5-0 hammering and two clean sheets in those two games. Like, it's obviously fantastic.
Poor start for the season for Athlone as well.
Yeah, it's been very poor.
What were you going to ask me there? Sorry.
How long can that Harps thing last? Like, is that going to be? I'm not sure if it can.
In terms of the management, or
no. Like they're, I know they've only turned around the last few games. It's not as if they're top of the table. The two wins that they've had come in the last two games, but. You know, to win 5-0 and then dig out a 1-0 win against on paper, a much better team. I know football isn't played on paper, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. But, like, you know, it's a really good week or so for Harps. So I'm not sure, like, is it going to, like, I don't really know.
They do have some good young players. I think a bit like Longford, that they'll get better as the season goes on. That lad Hodgins looks a really good player, 19-year-old. Again, it's a very young team. I'm just looking at their team from the other night. How many teenagers did they have now in there? Not that many, actually. You'd hear a lot about young players at Harps, but it's not as young as others. There's two teenagers in their starting 11, and then they've got a couple of 20-year-olds, and then they've Cawley there, McNamee, they're both in their 30s. So Mikey Pace is 26. You know, there's.
It's interesting the narratives that people or fans of teams come out with. Like,
I would say that a 16-year-old and a 19-year-old come off the bench as well.
Oh yeah, no, absolutely. But that, you know, that happens for loads of teams.
Yeah,
you know, this idea that
it
is a young division.
Yeah,
but like there at the weekend, like it's where Dundalk were just a bunch of volunteers going around, like, you know, as if that they weren't, you know, this. Oh, you know, we don't even have the biggest budget in the league. Shut up. Absolute bollocks. It's absolutely insane.
I'd say Cove's probably giving them a run for their money, to be fair, budget-wise.
Yeah, probably. But, like, you know, this idea that, like, oh, you know, we're so close to going bust and now blah, blah, blah. They're still a full-time team in the First Division, lads.
Yeah.
Shut up.
One more point I want to make about that Athlone Harps game.
Mm.
The Athlone defending. Oh my god.
Tragic.
Fair play to Dylan Hand, I'll say that much, because he saved a couple of goals and he's going to have to do an awful lot of that old making up work all season long when he's playing alongside Colin Moorhead one, because he is an absolute liability at the back. I used to always say it when Longford were playing Bray, anytime he was injured or suspended I was heartbroken.
Look, there was a good bit of bailing out there from the keeper and from Dylan Hand.
Yeah.
Aside
from the individual errors from the likes of Cole, they just look an incredibly poorly drilled team as well. We spoke about well-drilled teams earlier in the Premier Division, Galway and Drogheda. That alone team, I don't know what on earth they'd be doing on the training ground, because they look absolutely a sixes and sevens all over the pitch.
Yeah, they made Harps look very good. Like, we'll say there was some chances there that, like, Harps were on top in the early exchanges and they were doing some really nice stuff. But the defending, like the positioning, the marking of players. Simple as, like, just get goal side of your man seemed to be a foreign concept to the defenders.
I don't know, was it a back four or back three or back five, whatever shape they play, but their defensive line, it's supposed to be in a straight line. And yeah. I know when you watch the highlights, it's going diagonally across the pitch. And then they're wondering why they're getting caught out in behind. Oh, it's absolutely tragic stuff.
Yeah, no, it's brutal. Like, and even if you look back at, like, even if you look at the goal, like, for some reason, Kyle O'Connor, formerly of Longford, he takes two or three steps back from the goal scorer before he gets the ball, which puts him into absolutely no man's land. Yeah. He can do nothing then, because the ball is just passed by him and he can't make the turn and get around to get to block the shot. He's a total non-entity as soon as that. But like, he's dropping back for absolutely no reason. He's way behind the line, as you say, and then there's nothing that can be done. Harps go out and win 1-0. That's it. Yep. Job done.
Horrendous
stuff. So yeah, really poor from Athlone, and they want to book up their ideas, because that is like, you can look back through some of the highlights for Athlone this season.
Yeah. Comic and stuff, some of it.
Ah, brutal. Yeah. Ah, it's a joke.
Like, again, we're talking about budgets there and expectations of certain clubs. At loan, again, you look at the players that have come in there, Premier Division players, the budget's up there. I don't think that's any surprise at all to anyone. And they're sitting, what, second bottom in the league?
Mm. Yeah,
not good enough.
Not good enough. And like, just one further thing. I know that, you know, we're coming around to nearly the first round of games being done.
Mm.
You know, obviously teams can turn it around as the season goes on. But most teams have taken a look at each other. Like, Longford Town have played the top three. We've been playing four out of the top five. Yeah, it's not good. It's not really not good.
I mean, like, Athlone would have been spoken about. Could they be a danger to Dundalk? They're 12 points behind them. They're not making that up against Dundalk. So the title's gone already.
I don't think so. Oh, sorry, for Athlone. Yeah, absolutely. Excuse me. Yeah. Definitely.
They're seven Albers. Points behind Cove. Like, just to finish second out of Dundalk is a major ask after six or seven games.
Yeah. Well, look, it's not fatal yet. But
no.
It's getting there.
But
it's
as you
there.
Said, first round of games almost over. It's getting there. Longford Town 2, Treaty United 0. You had a bird's eye view. You were on commentary for LOI TV. You did a great job, I thought, as well. This is probably one of the games that I haven't seen a huge amount of compared to the others. But from what I've been told, although it could be very biased sources, I believe Longford were deserving winners on the night.
Yeah, absolutely. Treaty, I thought, did create some good chances, but just weren't cohesive enough. One thing I did mention a few times on commentary, where Treaty were winning the ball at the back or picking up possession or a loose pass from Longford. They couldn't make two passes after that. Right. Longford got the ball, picked up possession time and time and time again from Treaty giving it to them. There was some really good stuff. Now, I know the two of us have been big fans of Aaron Doran for Longford Town so far. He's been
team of the week this week.
Yeah, and deservedly so. Should have been in it three or four times already. He's been sensational.
Yeah.
But I don't know if it's just him like kind of telegraphing where the ball is going to go and he's picking up possession, or just Treaty handed it to him. The decision making from Treaty, I thought, was particularly poor. There was a big call for a red card in the first half. The striker Trippamir.
Right.
Left one in on Swadzer, and he was sore. His ankle was a heavy challenge. I didn't really feel it was a red card. Like, it wasn't like a tackle, it was like a breaking ball, and Swazier, who got there before Trippamir. I said on commentary as much, I didn't think it was a red card. But I understand that Treaty were very relieved that it wasn't. They expected it to be a red card themselves, so there you go.
Is this the start of the Treaty slide that we've been predicting for a while?
I'm not 100% sure. I think like they did create some chances. They hit the post. Harry Halbach's did a great chance in the first half in particular, where it was a corner and there was a bit of chaos in the town box, and Harry Halbach was blocked from coming out to it.
I seen that. You're giving the keeper a bit of rope there, I think.
Yeah, I am. Yeah. but like, well, I can't give any rope to the lad who booted it over the bar.
Yeah, he's got to hit the target. Oh, there's a little bit of traffic in front of him, but hit the target.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Even if you drive that goal bound, the defender panics, sticks the arm out, anything could happen. You can't put it over the bar.
Yeah, and well over the bar. Well over the bar. That was next or near going in. But look, Longford Town did well. They created plenty of chances themselves, but probably weren't clinical enough. Well, obviously they weren't, because they didn't score in the first half. But they were dominant in the first half, and I think there was a bit of a... Well, I certainly felt that they might have been a bit annoyed that they didn't capitalise. But look, they got the penalty and tightened it off with Emmanuel Olufemi driving it into the top corner.
I was raging. I wasn't on commentary because a good counter attacking goal like that in the last minute, that's a lovely way to round off a night commentating. And I was like, oh, I'd love to be calling that now. You did a very good job.
Well, yeah. Well, look, this is all your decision, man. This is the games are there for you to take. But look, I thought it was a very good performance, a clean sheet for Longford Town, which is nice. Treaty did hit the post as well, but I don't think they deserved anything out of the game.
I actually must get the name. So the reason I wasn't on comms for LOI TV on Saturday night, I was doing world feed commentary of Australia against Sporting Lisbon. Mm-hmm. And like we're always talking, and particularly tonight, we talked a lot about referees.
Uh-huh.
The referee in the Sporting game the other day was absolutely, I won't say shocking, but even before, so I was doing my notes, obviously, prepping for comms, and yeah. I noticed this lad had only done 9 league games and had given out a lock of red cards and about 60-something yellow cards. So I was like, geez, he's got a high old card rate, this fella.
You're a busy boy.
He sent the boy off after 34 minutes in the first half the other day for 2 yellows that were both very harsh. He then gave 2 penalties to Sporting, and one of them was never a penalty in a million years. And then there was a red card at the end as well. So he gave 2 reds, and it was like, just looking at the stats here, how many yellows did he give out? He gave out 7 yellows to Estrella, 1 to Sporting, and 2 reds for Estrella, and 2 penalties. So I'm going to give the listeners the name here. Anyone that follows the old card betting, G. Correa was the referee of this name, the referee's name. I'm definitely going to be looking to see what games he's getting in the future, because you want to be on the overs on the card markets there. But anyway,
I was actually in Estrella there a few weeks ago. They played, was it Nacional they played?
Could be, yeah.
No, it wasn't. Who the hell did they play?
How long ago was this?
Three weeks ago.
Let's see who they played. It wasn't one of the big boys. Wasn't one of the big three, obviously.
No. Gil Vicente.
Gil Vicente. 1-1 draw, was it?
Yeah. If anybody, I know, I think at least 20% of the people I know have been in Lisbon this year already.
Yeah.
It's a very popular occasion. But if anybody is thinking about going to a game, I think they play most of the games on a Friday because they're like a lower team in the league, so they don't get like too many TV spots unless they're playing someone big. But it's only €15 in.
It's only 10 kilometers outside of Lisbon too, isn't it, Estrella?
Oh yeah, you can just get the train or the metro or whatever. Handy. You need to pay cash on the door. Very League of Ireland like. stadium is as old as dirt.
Very League of Ireland like.
Very League of Ireland.
And it would seem the referee in Portugal, very League of Ireland like.
But I know they were playing Sporting, but like they were playing Gil Vicente in like a bit of a relegation 6-pointer when I was there. And the quality wasn't fantastic. Like, I think Shamrock Rovers would have...
It wasn't a great game, now, to be honest.
Yeah.
It wasn't great. Bar the controversial decisions now, I would have been quite bored on commentary.
Yeah, and you're doing it on your own as well.
Yeah. So there you go. Right, that was a Portuguese podcast review this week. Before we round up on the first division, and we hear from Kieran Kilduff, Dundalk 3, Wexford 0. And, I was impressed with Dundalk, Gary. It's amazing that, you know, when I tweeted that at 3-0 up that I wasn't impressed with Dundalk, that a few fellas lost their mind and actually took it seriously. But, you know, you live your life glued to Twitter 24/7, that's what happens. Dundalk 3, Wexford 0, and it was a very impressive performance. First half, it was kind of same old story from Dundalk. Lots of possession and lots of situations where they got into good positions and it kind of just broke down. Second half, a complete different story. They were so clinical. First goal from Gaxa is beautiful. And I was right behind it. He just drops the shoulder, curls the ball in off the far post. Class goal. And he had a serious game. He was involved in everything for Dundalk. The second goal, who got the second goal for them the other night?
Can't remember.
Oh, that was the Sean Keogh goal. How could I forget that? Unbelievable. I keep saying it. He is a serious player. He's going places, that lad. I actually spoke to him after the game. People want to listen to that, it's on the Between the Strikes members. Takes the ball up, puts the head down, drives into the area. He's at a real acute angle and he kind of gets the place where you think, geez, is this lad going to actually shoot for me or is he going to try and pick out a player? And he just drills it and beats the goalkeeper, Martin, who, by the way, had a really good game. It could have been way more than 3 only for him. And then the last goal, fairness to Wexford, they set up very defensively, a bit like Longford last week. And once they went 2-0 down, they did try and open up at the back, but they just on him Keith Ward. And I know we've probably been critical of Ward going back there, and we've kind of been like, what's the story there? What's the point in that? But this is the exact situation where he will make hay in the first division. He comes on, he has so much space. He ran the game. The third goal, he just passes out wide to Horgan. Horgan rolls it across and it's tapped in at the back post for the third goal. And as I said, they could have had a couple more after that. They were brilliant in the second half, the Dundalk, and it felt like a real statement victory from them.
Yeah, certainly a statement. Well, I think we were talking about this game. You found Wexford to be very poor.
The first half, obviously, they go up there with a game plan similar to Longford's last week. They were very defensive. All they really had up top was long balls up to Mikey Rowe, and I felt sorry for him. He did really well to hold on to it and keep it, and he'd get so far, and then he'd be smothered by three lads, and he's just done as much as he can. And it was a bit like watching young Marta against Dundalk a couple of weeks ago, running the line so well, holding up to it as well as he can, but you just eventually, the pressure's too much. And it was similar from a Wexford point of view, but I felt defensively they definitely weren't as strong as Longford were a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, not a great result. Look, I suppose, I think they're, Wexford and Bray are the only teams that would draw so far this season in the division. But look, I think, yeah, it's a tough one for Wexford, tough result. Like, they'll have to get their thinking caps on, because as bad as it was, it's still not great to be losing 3-0.
No. One player I will point out from Wexford, though, that really caught my eye was one of the teenagers. I mentioned the amount of teenagers that played in this game, but Caelum Harnett, I think he's only 17 of them, right? Really cool and composed on the ball. He looks a proper little player, so keep an eye out for him if you're coming up against Wexford in the next few weeks. But look, while we're on the theme of young players and player development, I spoke to the Dundalk manager, Kieran Conduff, after the game, and we did have a little bit of a chat about how many young players are coming through the First Division at the moment. So let's hear what Kieran had to say.
Kieran, your biggest win of the season in terms of scoreline, was it your best performance as well?
Second half, yeah. I think we hit that gear that we've been probably hoping to hit. There was a bit of frustration maybe in the first half. I think the intensity maybe in the press, it was a little bit disjointed and the gaps were too big, and we probably, you know, we were trying to communicate it on, but it was kind of hard. We were kind of caught in it. We still probably had chances in the first half to score and take the lead, but I think at half time we kind of rectified a few things. We kind of told the lads to be a bit braver in their approach, and I think, you know, I think we were very convincing in that second half. We kind of went into that, as I said, that extra gear that we needed to. And listen, it could have been even more convincing in the end. I think 3-0 was probably a fair reflection, but there was a couple of more chances probably got away.
Did you almost need a night like that, given some of the games previously? I know I spoke to you after the Treaty game where you felt it got away from you on the night. It's been games where you've been so on top in terms of possession and chances. Even last week against Longford, I think you had 15, 16 shots a goal and only win it with a goal with 15 minutes to go. So did you need a night like that, Tom? Yeah. And blow away some cobwebs.
Yeah, look, we're still a new entity. A lot of, even Longford themselves, a load of new players, and as do Wexford. A lot of teams are still finding their feet. I think, look, and we're still tweaking things at times, but I think we know we've trained hard, we're fit, the lads are hungry, and we've players that can have a big impact off the bench. And we saw that with Andy Parishiff last night, and I feel tonight with Wardy and lads coming onto the pitch, putting their foot in the ball. I thought, you know, that's probably exactly what we've been needing, options from the bench who are coming on and having a real impact, and we could take all that forward with us. But yeah, look, there's probably that. Yeah, look, people are trying to say it's a statement win tonight. I think it's a statement half. I think in the first half we probably, you know, flattered to deceive a little bit. It was like we never really got going, and the second half definitely was more like the level I'd like us to play at.
You spoke last week about the absence in your team with the two international lads away, Vinnie Leonard and Sean Keogh. We saw their impact tonight when they returned to the team.
Yeah, look, they're huge players for us, but we'd lads, you know, Moira, Conor O'Keefe, we had a few, and look, that was never an excuse. That only came after the game last week. I still thought we could have been better at times last week, and we said this week we wanted to try and really have a statement performance, and lads stand up and show really how good they are. And I think you can see the quality in Leo Gaxa. We've missed him there after his suspension in Kerry, but he's come up with a wonder goal to kind of, I suppose, settle the nerves, and then we really kicked on from there. But yeah, look, we hit that gear tonight that we've been probably striving to hit for a while, but the problem the lads have now is that we have to keep that gear, and we know it's there now, so we've probably set a standard for ourselves. But look at it from the first seven games, and it's only seven games in, there's still 29 to go. Nothing's been won or anything here tonight. It was just a good performance in the second half that I think we probably impressed, and hopefully we can take that into next week.
Obviously you've been able to bring players like Leo Gaxa, Dean Ebe to the club in the off season, but four teenagers in the starting 11 tonight, that must be equally as pleasing as the performances of new signings like Leo Gaxa.
Yeah, look, I think that was something huge, that we've probably got that blend right. It's not all kids and it's not all experienced lads, it's a bit of both. And I think look at Leo was playing first division football second half of last season, as was Dean Ebe, and you know, we were cutting our cloth to measure by bringing in two lads who we knew were very, very effective and can go higher than the level of the first division. And that's, we handpicked those. But then obviously players like Vinnie Leonard came back and just impressed in pre-season. We knew we had him obviously in his ranks, so I was happy to sign him in the off-season. I knew he was capable of, but he's just gone strength to strength. He's part of the Irish team that qualified for a World Cup. And then Sean Keogh as well at left back. But they're all taking their opportunity, and that probably is something that I've said to everyone since I came into the club, was, you know, it's a clean slate. Last year, we think from the opening game of last year to the opening game of this year, 19 players had moved on from the club. So it's been a huge overhaul for us too. Of course, it's very it's positive when you have players like Daryl Horgan and that staying around the club, because and A. Durvin and all these, even Peter Cherry, those lads experienced. They've, you know, Daryl Horgan's won multiple Premier Division titles. Mm. You know what I mean? So like, to have that blend of youth and experience in the dressing room is essential, and it's something that I think at this moment in time is working quite well for us.
I just spoke to Stephen Elliott briefly about it as well. They also had four teenagers and they're starting 11 tonight, so 8 teenagers out of the 22 starting players. It's very, very impressive and great to see. There's a lot of talk in Irish football at the minute about player development and academies. Do first division clubs need to be supported more, because they're obviously producing a huge amount of high talents for the league at the moment?
Without a doubt, especially with the new rules, with the lads not leaving until they're over 18 to go to England and stuff like that. I know some can head off to Europe, but you can see the talent now, especially in the first division. There's definitely been a dynamic shift, a demographic shift in the age profile of the players that are playing, and we've no problem in playing them. Do you know what I mean? Like, I think it was one of the weeks I finished with two 16-year-olds, a 17-year-old and a 19-year-old across the back four. So it is what it is. So of course we need support, and we don't just need financial support and academy support. A guy was probably shouting for league support last week, where I was losing two players for international duty. Now, that's not me bemoaning it before the game, it was more after the game, but I do understand the rules. But it's changed. It's not, say, a first division of old, where, you know, it's a couple of experienced players at the end of their days and I'm going to play in the first division. The first division right now has a lot of the best talent and the young lads in the country, because they know they're going to get game time down here, and we're no different. Wexford are no different, Longford are no different. I think they might have been missing Top Q last week. Yeah. Another player that is going to be a huge void for that team, like them, like the same way the lads are for us. And someone always gets in as an opportunity. But I just think, look, as a league now, it's great, it's all positive. You know, and of course I'm here bemoaning my personal issues, but I think as a country and as a league now, young lads playing at the highest level is all we ever wanted, and get an opportunity and can stay here. A lot of these lads are doing, some of them are in TY, some are doing leaving certs, and they can play at the highest level or play tonight in front of 2,000 people and play for Dundalk. I think it's a great kind of culture and environment that within the first division at the minute, and hopefully just it gets that support, as you alluded to, that both financial and government and everything else in the league, we can just harness it in the right way.
And finally, UCD up next, you're nearly getting them at a wrong time.
Yeah, massively. Everyone knew it was a matter of time, of probably when instead of if, they were going to hit their top gear, and they've too many good players to probably have started as slow as they have. But you know, they're an institution of Irish football. I've played there myself as UCD. They always have a team that are more than capable of challenging in any first division, and you can see the quality in their ranks. I think they probably surprised everyone with their slow start, but someone said they won tonight, did they? So they're kind of find their stride eventually. So they'll be it'll be a really tough test for us next week in the bowl, and I think after that then as well as Cove. So we've a couple of big challenges coming up, and nothing will be taken for granted.
Kieran, great start to the season. Thanks for your time.
Thanks as always.
Are you enjoying the show? Please consider buying us a beer via our website betweenthestripes.net, or head directly to buymeacoffee.com/BTSLOI. Thank you for your continued support of Between the Stripes.
Yeah, some very interesting thoughts from Kieran Cadoff. I have to say as well, Gary, I've been really impressed, and I think I've said this a few times on the pod already this season, I've been impressed with how Kilduff has gone about things. I know you've spoken about the budget there and the players that they have and full-time team in the first division. It should be easy for them in some ways, but at the same time, we've spoken about the Dundalk managers in recent enough years on this podcast that constantly put their foot in their mouth when they do interviews. And I know the situation was probably very different in terms of the pressure of, everything going on outside around them, the running of the club and trying to keep the team in the Premier Division. This is a more comfortable situation to be in. You're top of the first division. The crowds are coming out and supporting you and everything. But I think he carries himself really well in the media and just generally how he's gone about the job since he's come in.
So, closeted Dundalk fan is happy with the Dundalk legend manager.
Oh, sure. I can't please some people. Dundalk hate, in some quarters I'm a Dundalk hater and in other quarters I'm obsessed with Dundalk. So I just can't win.
Yeah, look, he's doing a good job so far. Look, you know, as I alluded to, he's not doing it, you know, with a volunteer team. the way some people are doing it. But look, lots of good stuff going on the field there for Dundalk.
I know there was one Dundalk player I spoke to on the pitch the other day after the game. He wasn't impressed with your analysis of the recent Longford game. So I think he was out to prove a point against Wexford the other day.
Oh, fair play to him. Look, he keeps putting in them performances against other teams that'll do me.
And keep on listening. That's the
absolutely, yeah, yeah.
The haters and the lovers, keep on listening. We know you do anyway. Right, Between the Stripes LOI podcast prediction time. And we have to give a big shout out to last week's listener that played, Edward O'Callaghan Patton. He absolutely ran us into the ground, Gary. He got 13 points last week. He got 3 correct scores and he got multiple correct results as well. So 13 points. He was the top scorer last week.
Probably the biggest haul in a week.
In a long time, in a good while now, I got 6 points last week, 1 correct score, that was Cork Drogs, and 4 correct results, or 3 correct results, and you got 5 points last week. You got the correct score in Bowes Galway, but unfortunately you just didn't get enough correct results. So after all of that, the table is as follows. I am still bottom on 26. You're only 2 points ahead of me, Gary, on 28. The listeners are opening up a gap, which is worrying at this stage of the season. They're out on 41 points now after Edwards' double-digit haul last week. Playing this week on behalf of the listeners is Scott Buckley, who is a Cork City fan. We're going to start with the First Division games, though, first, and it's Finn Harps against Longford Town we will start with. And Scott going for a 2-0 win to the home side here, who have won their last 2 games without conceding, of course.
Right. He mustn't have been watching my stream on Saturday. I think like this is going to be, you know, a few weeks ago, like Longford Town might have been happy enough to play Harps with the way they were going, but a couple of really good results. I think though, I'm going to say that Longford Town are going to get something out of this game, and
don't go 1-1 because they always lose when you do that.
1-0 Longford Town.
On the town.
Yeah.
One question for you. They've got Harps Friday, Wexford Tuesday, and then who's the home
game? That game might be changed.
Because
I call it, I think it's the university's international team.
Right. Well, that would actually probably work out for Longford. I know it needs to be played at some stage. But what I was going to ask you, they've got the game Friday, possibly a game Tuesday, and another game the Saturday. Will Wayne Groves have to maybe prioritise some of these games over others?
I don't think so. I think like Longford Town haven't had, you know, a lot of injury issues or anything like that they've had in years past. You know, and I know there's a few lads with injuries, but like there's a lot of cover there. We'll say Andrew Spain didn't play on Saturday. So like, you know, he's a very good centre back for Longford Town, just for example. Dean George didn't start the game against Treaty, but he came on. I think there are options.
You feel the squad's strong enough to do a bit of rotating?
Yeah, I think so, but I'm not really sure. Like, I'm not sure. Like, I know 3 games in, you know, the space of 8 days isn't ideal, and there will be obviously, what do they call it in the NBA or the NBA? Load management.
Right,
is what they call it. I know that some of that will have to go on, but I think that squad is fairly healthy at the moment. So
right, fair enough. Yeah. Right, so you're going 1-0 Longford. Scott's going 2-0 to Finn Harps. Do I go somewhere in between and go for a draw here? Longford are working extremely hard. I think you're right in what you said a couple of weeks ago on the pod. They seem to be working harder than some teams, I think that really stands them. I think, will they be going up here to frustrate Harps, or will they be going up here to try and put their mark on the game?
Well, like, what are you frustrating? Like, I know they scored 5 goals in 1 game, but it's not as if they're scoring 3 a game and you're looking to, like, you know, nullify, you're only looking to lose 1-0. I don't think that's the case here at all.
They create many chances, Longford, on Saturday.
They got into a lot of right positions. Corey Chambers made a huge save against Josh Gergie.
Oh, I've seen that one, yeah.
If you actually look back at that, I think it was a really good representation, actually. I did forget about it earlier. It just goes to show, like, a treaty just weren't, didn't have the brain for it, really. Like, Longford Town had, like, an okay, a really reasonably good press, let's say. But they were making, it was like they were pressing, like, animals, the amount of ball they were getting out of it. It was just treaty weren't paying that much of attention, to be quite honest. So,
I think Longford can probably nick it. I'm going to go for a 1-1 draw, though. I'm going to play it down the middle. Cove against Wexford. Big game for both teams here.
Yeah, really, absolutely. Like, you know, Cove had that disappointment there against Bray. Obviously, a 3-0 beating at home. Or away to Dundalk. I think this is going to be another tough one. Well, not a tough one for Wexford, but I think with the Astro pitch, I'm going to go for a 2-0 win to Cove.
2-0 win to Cove, okay. I don't think anything's been that straightforward or plain sailing for Cove this season. I think it's very hard to get away from what a huge loss Aaron Dobbs is. I think I spoke to you about that the other night. I even said it to Stephen Elliott again. If you want to hear my interview with Stephen Elliott, it's on the Members Club as well. But I said to him, like, a game like that, he's priceless because he takes the pressure off. When you get the ball up the pitch, he holds on to it. And when you create chances, he'll take them. So he's a huge loss. Gonna go for a draw here. Gonna go 1-1 as well. Scott's going for a 3-1 win to Wexford. Just haven't been overly convinced with Cove just yet. Treaty against Kerry, Munster Derby.
Big game here for Treaty. I think they'll be under a bit of pressure to get a good result here. I wasn't mad about what I saw on Saturday.
But you've seen both of these teams, so who are you more impressed with?
Wasn't majorly impressed with either, to be honest. I'm just trying to see. I think Treaty could do it here, though. I'm going to go for a 2-1 win to Treaty.
You're going 2-1 Treaty.
Yeah.
At home. Might just edge it all right. Kerry are still giving away some silly goals, aren't they?
They really are. Like, you know, they shot themselves in the foot there the other night.
Do you know what? UTD. Another 1-1 draw.
No, Treaty special. Yeah.
But Treaty probably will win it.
I think so.
I'm not sure if I gave Scott's predictions for the last couple of games. He's going 3-1 Cove against Wexford. He's going 1-0 here, Treaty against Kerry. Athlone Town against Bray. Anything.
This could be 4-0 Athlone or 8-0 Bray. Who knows? Yeah. Where is this game?
Athlone. AstroTurf Brothers.
Well, there's a lot of brothers in the league. In the AstroTurf terms. I think Athlone will swing this one. I don't know why. This is pure vibes. I think Bray, even though we've been quite harsh on them in the last few weeks saying that they're limited, they're clearly they're not that limited. They do seem to be ticking along to some good degree. But I think they have a limitation as well where they could still turn out a result like this. Where they get hammered. I'm going to go... who are going to score the goals for Athlone? I'm going to go for a 1-0 win to Athlone.
Okay. Scott's going 0-0. I'm going to go for a draw as well. Surprise, surprise. I'm going 1-1 again. I just think this division is so unpredictable at the moment that I'm finding it very difficult to call these games. UCD against Dundalk on form here. This is top against bottom. You'd fancy Dundalk, but the pitch is a major factor here.
pitch is certainly a major factor.
And we heard from Ciara good enough earlier, and bad journalism from me. I should have asked him how he intended to cope with the pitch, but that escaped my mind. It'd be interesting to see if Dundalk play a bit more direct. They've obviously got Dean Ebbe up there, so they have the option to do that. Yeah, it'd be interesting to see how they go about their business on that pitch up there.
Yeah, definitely. But I do believe, like, Dundalk, I've had a bad time over recent years against UCD. I know there's...
I mean, you were there the night they lost 3-2 from... Were the 2-1 up that night? It was an unbelievable game of football.
Andy Boyle got sent off in the UCD half, pulling a lad back, if you remember.
Was that in that game we were at?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. The Stephen O'Donnell, the famous Stephen O'Donnell high line, really done them that day.
Yeah, exactly. Who's putting out that narrative? I think Dundalk are going to find this one hard.
I think so too.
I'm going to go for a nil-all draw here.
Do I even need to tell you what I'm going for here?
1-1.
Yeah, 1-1. Scott going for a 1-0 win to Dundalk. Moving into the Premier Division. I might get off the fence here when we get to the Premier Division games. Drogheda against Waterford. Scott going for a 2-0 win to the Drogs.
Yeah, I think like Waterford are probably in a like they've been really unlucky in a lot of places.
So, yeah,
it's disappointing, but I'm gonna go for a 1-0 win to Drogheda. No, sorry, 2-1 win to Drogheda. They're just turning.
It's hard not to be impressed with what they're doing.
Really,
yeah,
100%. Now the one issue I have with that is I think Waterford have been really unlucky. In like that game that they lost 3-0 to Bowes, didn't deserve that. Created loads of chances, just couldn't get it over the line. The 1-0 or the Porricum or the own goal from Dara Leahy the other night, another example.
Yeah.
But I think Drogheda will have their number, to be honest. It'll be tight, 2-1 to Drogheda.
Yeah, I like Scott's prediction. I'm going to follow him with a 2-0 there. Derry against Cork. I'm going straight in with the 1-1. This will be a boring, boring game of football.
Where is this game? Sorry.
It's in the Brandywell.
I think Derry will do it. Michael Duffy to score a free kick and then Derry to do nothing else in the game. And everybody say what great a team Derry are. But obviously, we hate Derry, of course, don't forget.
And the dog and Bowes and whoever else, Sligo.
Yeah. 1-0 Derry, Michael Duffy free kick.
I'll give you the entire predictions league if that happens. Right, I'm going 1-1, as I said. Scott's going 2-1 to Derry there, and he's a Cork fan, so that's a bit concerning. Bowes against Sligo.
This is huge.
Ah. So we're saying this every week about Bowes. We were saying how big the Galway game was and they fell.
No, we didn't say that. We knew they'd lose that game. Well,
yeah, we did.
They're shy. Yeah. So, but this is, and like if you look around like some of the online jibber jabber around Bowes after the game on Saturday, it was like, well, if we lose against Sligo.
Yeah, we can just, yeah.
Yeah, we're allowed to kill him. No one actually said that, but like that was the feeling I got. Like,
no,
it was,
but
like,
actually, do you know what? We had a conversation earlier about Galway being title contenders.
Mm-hmm.
If Bowes do or don't lose this game,
mm-hmm.
do we need to have a conversation about Bowes about relegation? In their current guise, which may not be for much longer, I don't think.
Yeah, but like, what's the solution? You know, you get in another lad. You know, let's say, just for example's sake, the first man that I can think of, Rory Higgins.
Yeah.
Played with Bowes. I don't think he had a great time when he was with Bowes as a player. You know, but like, I do think, let's say, look, if they do move on the manager, it has to be absolutely everybody in that coaching staff.
Yeah,
this idea of this piecemeal, oh, you know, Pender's a good lad. Ah, yeah, keep him around. Great fella. Has to go. He's been a part of the last number of failures at Buzz. So, yeah, I'm just not 100% sure what way they go if they do decide to move on Anil Reynolds.
In terms of this game, then, if Sligo play like they did after they went 2-0 down against Shelburne, they've got a great chance of winning this. If they give away the goals that they give away again, they've got no chance. So,
But like, I think, yes, but they'd have to make sure to pass it to Collie Whelan. Like I'd say, I had a very little faith in any other Buzz player being able to round the keeper or anything like that. Like
they could have done with having Cian Kavanagh here, because we saw the issues Buzz had with crosses the other day. You're sending balls into Kavanagh there, you've got a good chance. So really could have done without him getting sent off.
Absolutely. And plus in the smaller squad that they have, like that's going to be an issue more and more. But I just can't see how it happens for Buzz. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, you know, there was a friend of mine, he's been going to Buzz for probably as long as he's alive. He said that he didn't bother going out in the second half. He was annoyed, like. And he said that was the first time that has ever happened. I think like there's a lot of tiredness and like, oh, we're tired of this shit again and again and again. And now they're moving into nearly a calendar year without a win in Daly Mount, which isn't good. But I don't see how it's going to turn. What, like, just for final point, what are Bo's coaching staff and players doing right now? I know it's very late on Tuesday night, but like, what did they do today? What are they doing to turn this around? And obviously, I don't know what that is, but I have no confidence in that they're doing anything worthwhile to turn it around. I think it's going to be another slog on Friday. They might win it, but I keep going back to my Tim Clancy St. Pat's thing.
Yeah.
Where this is great. We beat a team towards the bottom. And then who they're playing next, they're away to Shells. They get annihilated there, although they have had some good results against Shells in recent times. But let's say they do get beat 3-0. It's back to the same yarn. It's only stay of execution for a week. So prediction, I'm going to go for 1-0 win to Sligo.
1-0 win to Sligo?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
You made a very good point about how they reacted and tried to play.
Yeah, I just worry without Kavanagh, they're relying on young Elding, who looks a talent. They're without Waweru at the minute. I just think they're lacking options at the moment. Sligo, the Moose came on for 20 minutes against Galway. Again, he doesn't look like he's getting any fitter. Like, if he can't score against a team that has conceded more goals than any other team in the division, like, is he ever going to get right?
Well, that's the thing, and I think, but that's indicative of the state of the coaching and management at the moment. They brought in this ringer. All he has to do is get a bit more fit. We're not at, like, I don't think anybody in Daly Mount is looking for him to be running 10 or 12 kilometers a game, right? We just need you to horse it into the net where there's probably two other players in the whole division that would be able to do that. Hooban and Amand, maybe Keane, Melia, let's say, just off the top of my head. He's not even able to do that. He, as you said, he's not getting any fitter. He's not getting any trimmer. So, you know, for example, what was Stephen O'Donnell doing today? Was he making sure that the, you know, feeding plan for the Moose has been adhered to? I don't know, but you know what I'm saying? Things aren't getting better. That's my problem.
Yeah.
Just on the Moose, just for example, as an example. But nothing has changed. Mm-hmm. He's came in, what, two and a half months ago, big fanfare, big this, big that, and the other, and a contract that's basically...
Big, all right.
Yeah, he can go if another team comes in for him without pretty much of a say from Buzz. If you know, if he scores 20 goals come June, he can write a buy sign con. I don't want to hear about it. Good luck. That's part of the deal. He's going to be a Buzz forever. It's crazy.
I'm gonna go after all of that. I'm gonna go with a Buzz win 1-0 just to
Will the Moose score, will he?
Yeah, go on.
Oh, that'd be poetic. Go on.
For the bonus point. Moose to score the winner, 1-0. Galway against Rovers. This is massive for Galway. They'll have a sold-out AM&DC Park. If they can win this, they really would stamp out their credentials as potential title contenders.
I don't think they're going to lose it.
Right, okay. That'll be interesting. Scott's going 2-1. Galway.
What are you going?
Oh,
you could do the next one as well.
I think Rovers
track me.
They've got a few late goals against Galway, I think. Did they get a late winner against them last season? Do I remember that?
Oh, possibly, yeah.
My mind's eye, Graham Burke getting a late winner against them in a game. Like, I was looking at Rovers the other day, the players that ended the game on the pitch, they had Jack Byrne, they had, I don't know the Burke end the game, but he definitely was on the pitch for most of it. Gaffney was back. Like, I know we keep saying it, we're probably saying it a solid 2 years on this show. If they could just get them players fit, they're going to be there or thereabouts.
Well, just when you mention Jack Byrne, I don't rate him.
At all.
Full stop. Yeah.
Okay.
No, not at all, but like...
Yeah, in terms of the level of hype.
Oh, yeah, no, he's not next or near it. And like, you know, one or two, oh, he played a lovely true ball and everybody creaming themselves for 6 months after it. Like, yeah, that's rubbish. Does not infer me. Like, so I would say I would much rather Graham Burke being on the team.
Burke started the season well.
Yeah. I would much rather him being fitter.
Big test for Leon Poles here, back in the team, and he's going to be dealing with...
Oh, God.
Pressure on set pieces.
The worst game for him. This is his opportunity.
Literally, I remember David De Gea's early days at United when he had the shaky start. Ferguson dropped him away to Stoke because that was the time the lap was in his prompt with the long throws. It could be something similar here. Not sure I see Rovers getting beaten here either. Go 1-1.
No, I can see Hickey at it again.
He's been class.
Oh, sensational. Absolutely sensational. And our sponsor was like, geez, I'm not sure. When he left Athlone and went to Galway, he was like, oh, I'm not sure. Not sure.
I think he knew deep down.
He did. He was probably just sour.
Yeah.
I'm gonna follow our listener.
Scott.
2-1. 2-1 to Galway. Yeah, wow. There's something nice going on. As you said, AM&DC Park will be rocking.
Yeah.
Shamrock Rovers coming down. Yeah. Is that the game on telly this week?
No, Pat Shells telly.
Oh, perfect. Yeah, that's fair enough as well. Yeah, okay.
And that's where we will round off. Pats against Shells.
A big one.
Big one.
Pats obviously dug it out there on Friday. Big test here, though. And it's not just like, you know, Shells. No, they have to show up as well. Like, this isn't just like,
yeah, they were probably, I wouldn't say clinging on at the end against Sligo, but after going 2-0 up, it wasn't as comfortable as you might have expected.
Yeah, I'm gonna go for a draw here. I'm gonna be on the fence.
End up being a bit of a classic TV disappointment.
Don't be putting that energy out there, man. But yeah, I would agree. I think there's going to be a bit of
cat and mouse type.
No, but like a bit of fear in both teams. Like, we don't want to lose this. Like, we'll say Shells think that, you know, and look, we're going to need to defend our title here this season. Pats are probably going to be the ones to be the main challengers.
Yeah,
we don't want to give them.
Yeah,
even a bit
you'd
of
gladly
a mental.
Take a point. Yeah,
you'd gladly take a point here, and especially with it being an Inchicore, 1-1 for me.
Going exactly the same. And Scott going for a really, really interesting one here. He must be a big Duffer fan. He's going 3-1 to Shells.
Drink the Kool-Aid, lad. Don't see that happening. But
look, our listeners have been in good form. They know their stuff. They're knowledgeable people. That's why they listen to this podcast. So
it's not natty knowledge you're getting off us anyway.
Right, before we go, let's take a look at the BTS hotline, which has a bit of a different angle on it this week. We're also put out a tweet, weekend reflections. So that I put out a tweet saying, pressure mounts on Reynolds, Galway title contenders, that disallowed goal in Cork, Talibor, Dundalk looking good and long for win again. What else was on your mind after the weekend? We'll read some of these out on the next pod. So get looking to see when our first kebab review will be.
Could be coming soon.
Could be coming soon. More on that.
Oh, well, actually, I had a kebab, but it wasn't in your company.
Yeah,
I had a kebab after the Dundalk game. Quite good, quite happy. Yep.
It's like to say, if you don't tweet it never happened.
Exactly.
Like if we don't talk about it on the podcast, you didn't eat it.
Yeah.
Shane says we're the first.
I wish my gut thought the same.
Shane says the first people who have mentioned Galway as title contenders playing Rovers at home, and I don't see us losing. The unbeaten run continues. Yes, if we win on Friday. David Relihan, Longford Town with a very professional performance against Treaty this weekend.
There you go.
I think that might have been a little play on the whole conversation I had with Tommy Barrett recently about Dundalk being too professional for them. The Saints says Saints go top and haven't really clicked yet. Harping on, Kieran Kilduff said as much in his post-match with you, but the age profile of squads in the First Division has changed drastically in the last few years. Nearly twice as many under-20s have played in the First Division as the Prem, shift in focus from clubs. Again, I think FAI need to look at that in terms of supporting these First Division clubs. Brian, the fourth official holding up the board with one replacing 97 to sub McGinty off after Liam Poles is still on my mind. I don't really get that anyway.
There was some bullshit. I think the fourth official tried to sub off, sent off McGinty.
Ah, okay.
So like he sent on Poles.
Yeah.
But then the ref was like, what are you doing here? Get off. You haven't been subbed yet.
Right.
You know what I mean? So yeah. I think they ended up picking McAniff to come off. But I don't think that decision was made at the time. So I think the fourth official got a bit ahead of himself.
Magpie, you must have a horn after Longford's win. Gary, a lucky omen. Drog goal was right to be chalked off. Rob Hennessy was right. Good call. Yeah, I might end up losing my spot on LOITV if Longford keep winning games when I'm not there.
Yeah, but just on that, yeah, he got it right in the end. But, like, you know, the ends...
The process was wrong.
Don't justify the means, yeah.
Anthony, Christ, are we still on about the disallowed goal? It really couldn't have been any simpler, and I find it worrying that so many seasoned commentators can't understand it. Conroy...
Just on that, there was a lot of... Some lad asked ChatGPT for the answer, and that, like, generated a lot of talk. Don't listen to me anyway, but definitely don't be listening to ChatGPT for, you know, good analysis about rules.
Lee, Drog riddled with injuries, still getting big results. Too early to tip us for a top four finish? And will we see a big name in the relegation playoff come the end of the year, Bowes or Derry?
I don't see Derry. Definitely not. They don't have the same problems to the same degree as Bowes.
Drog's top four?
Why not? I think one problem that they're going to have is Europe. That's going to be a bigger problem.
Not to be disrespectful, are they going to get that far in Europe? They're not going to have a Shamrock Rovers like run, so I don't think it's going to be a massive inconvenience.
It'll be a pain in the hole. Like, if they get through one round, like, that's a pain in the balls.
Bill, Galway for Europe, Johnny C and Ollie, the perfect partnership. Feel for Rennie, the Bowes setup is toxic. Manager after manager after manager being blamed. Stop the bus. Joey Brown, First Division in danger of being a procession again. Dundalk look miles better than everyone else without doing anything special. I would say that if Dundalk win against UCD and then beat Cove, I would fear it becoming a procession. Kieran, it's a long season. I wouldn't call us title contenders yet. We had a fall off informed towards the end of last season. I can't see it happening again. He doesn't say what club he supports, though, so that's not much good to us. And finally, Pat, second game in a row that Waterford play well for 80 minutes and then go to somehow lose the game. 1-0 up till the 88th minute Friday and conceding needless free kicks have cost us the game. I did actually hear the commentator say that just before the Brandon Cavanagh free kick, that they gave away a ridiculous amount of free kicks around the area in the last few minutes. That's something they obviously need to address. Lost the last three games now, really need to start picking up points soon. And just on the hotline front, we have a couple of comments here. Lord Chuckles Academy, who's a regular contributor. Exceptionally worrying times for Sligo. Some very good performances, but just not able to see anything through. I know it'll click sooner or later, but it's worrying. Jad Hakiki has been monumental for us. What a player. And Christy, if Ramblers don't turn possession into chances away from home, they will let Dundalk out of sight.
Yeah, I think that might be the case, but I think that was always something that we were thinking of, wasn't it? Like, you know, you have this idea that
like Boat or Cove, if they didn't get a hold of us, they're going to just come second and yeah. they'll be in the playoffs anyway. So it won't be too bad, but it won't be great, but it won't be too bad either. So
yeah. Well, look, a few minutes before midnight, I think we're going to wrap up here. Most people will be listening to this on Wednesday morning on their commute or whatever. So, look, that has been Series 9, Episode 8 of Between the Stripes LOI podcast. Thanks to Kieran Kilduff and Brandon Kavanagh for joining us. Thanks to our sponsor, Quinn AV. Great to get all that feedback and reaction and interaction via the Twitter. So make sure you're following us there. Search for Between the Stripes. Give us a follow. Engage with us there and we'll read out whatever you send us on the pod generally. And yeah, we're on TikTok as well, which is quite good at the minute. So follow us on that. And again, if you want to hear the interviews with Stephen Elliott and Sean Keogh from last Friday in Oriel Park, then check out the Members Club. You get the links on our social media platforms. But until next week, from Kieran Burke and Gary Riley, thanks for joining us and we'll speak to you again soon.
Thanks for listening. Check out BetweenTheStripes.net for all your favourite BTS content in one place. See you all next week.